Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks Podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
Good. It's Sunday.
It's Sunday.
I have to work every single day next week, and I'm not very excited about it.
Usually yeah.
I don't. But, yep, I have to.
That sucks.
I know. Well, my coworkers, like, I only have one coworker, and they're going on, like, vacation or something, mm-hmm. So I'm covering them. So sad about that.
Yeah, that is sad.
I don't want to work that many days. And I work open to close every single day.
Ooh, at the public library.
Yeah.
Rough.
How are you?
I'm good. I have an interview with a grad school on Friday, and I got into a different grad school. So I'm going to grad school either way.
So exciting.
So that's pretty exciting. And I'm excited about that. There's a child outside.
There is. Our window's open because it's nice. So
it is nice. So we're continuing our journey into the wild world of this year's Oscar noms.
Yes. We started with Golden Globe things. Mm-hmm. Many of those things have gone on to receive Oscar nominations, as they usually do.
Yep.
Now this at the Golden Globes, I believe, won for Best Direction. Am I right?
I believe so. Let me make absolutely sure.
I believe it did. Here, it also received 4 nominations at the Golden Globes, winning Best Motion Picture. It won Best Motion Picture Drama and Best Director.
Oh.
No. Yes. Confused. It says, this is what the sentence says. It received 4 nominations at the 78th Golden Globe Awards, winning Best Motion Picture Drama and Best Director in winning the latter award. So Chloe Zhao.
She won Best Director.
Yes, so she is the second woman at the Golden Globes to ever win Best Director.
I believe after Kathryn Bigelow
for The Hurt Locker. And she is the first Asian woman to ever win.
So exciting.
Best Director. So, let's talk about this plot.
Yeah.
Now, this movie stars Frances McDormand.
And a bunch of regular people.
She's the only person it stars.
Yep. Everyone else is, except for one other person who is actually just a real-life friend of Frances McDormand, playing her sister. Mm. And the rest are actual people who were in the nonfiction book. And they are playing slightly fictionalized versions of themselves.
Yes. So, interesting. But they're non-actors in this movie. So, in 2011, Fern loses her job after the U.S. gypsum plant in Empire, Nevada shuts down.
Yeah, the movie prefaces by talking about this place, Empire, Nevada, that basically ceased to exist after the mine shut down.
Yeah, because it was basically like a company town.
Yeah.
Like a one of those remaining company towns. Nevada, interestingly enough, this is just something I know about Nevada,
mm-hmm.
is like one of the most uninhabited states in
really?
The United States. Like, yeah, it's like almost all of their population lives in like 5% of the state.
Wow.
Because most of it is federal land.
Wow.
Nevada has the most federal land of any state in the United States. And a bunch of that land is nuclear bomb test sites.
Oh.
So
that's where the Hills Have Eyes is set.
Mm-hmm. So that's why nobody can live there and probably won't be able to live there for a long time. Technically, the United States is the most nuclear bombed country in the entire world because of all the nuclear bomb tests done in Nevada.
So we just bomb ourselves. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
We love it.
So it has a bunch of these like company type towns. She worked there for years along with her husband, who has recently died.
Mm-hmm.
Fern decides to sell most of her belongings and purchase a van to live in and travel the country searching for work. She takes a seasonal job at an Amazon fulfillment center through the winter.
So she, like, packs Amazon packages.
Yes. Linda, a friend and coworker, invites Fern to visit a desert rendezvous in Arizona organized by Bob Wells, which provides a support system and a community for fellow nomads.
Bob Wells has his own Wikipedia page, it looks like.
Yes, because he is a real person who
yes.
actually does, I think, exactly what the movie says he does.
And he is in this film. He plays himself.
Fern initially declines, but changes her mind as the weather turns cold and she struggles to find work in the area.
Mm-hmm. So they keep encouraging her to move somewhere warmer so she can live out of the van.
Yes, something that doesn't make sense to me is that Fern doesn't want to move because that's like exactly what van people do.
Well, yeah, I think it's, but she talks about it later about how it's like if she moved, her husband kind of ceases to exist because he didn't have any family.
And she's just homeless,
really. And she's just kind of homeless.
That's why she's living in a van. Not because she wants to.
Yeah.
It's like she decides, and I'm like, decides because she has no other option?
Well, I mean, she...
She can live with her family.
Yeah, but she doesn't want to. But yeah, so she is choosing to go join her friends at this rendezvous.
Yes, because it's very cold, and yes. She can't find work.
Yes.
At the rendezvous, Fern meets fellow nomads and learns basic survival and self-sufficiency skills for the road.
This movie's very pretty.
Yes, gorgeous. And the music.
Oh my gosh. It, like, amazing. This movie is just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Everyone's really good at the acting.
Yeah.
It's a little boring, I would say. But I think once you realize that most of these people are non-actors and that they're telling a very real story.
Yeah, it's a very realism film.
It is very realism film. And beautiful, though. Like, they film at all these national parks. It's gorgeous.
When Fern's van blows a tire, she visits the van of a nearby nomad named Swanky to ask for a ride into town to buy a spare.
I love Swanky.
Swanky chastises Fern for not being prepared and invites her to learn more road survival skills, and they become good friends.
So Swanky is teaching her the rules of the road, basically saying that, like, you could die out here. Like, if you're not prepared, you could literally die out here.
Yeah, because no one knows where you are.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't have a community. So she's, like, basically, like, you need to have these certain things. You need to always have spares. You need to have, like, road flares. You need to have, like, a little satellite radio thing that you can get in touch with people on, like, truckers, something.
Yeah.
In case something happens. So, Swanky tells Fern about her cancer diagnosis and her shortened life expectancy and her plan to make good memories on the road rather than waste away in a hospital. They eventually part ways.
I really like this scene where Swanky is describing all the places she's been. And she describes the swallow nests. Oh my gosh. And she's like, man, I could have died right there and I would have been okay. It was so beautiful. Oh my god. Aww. Oh, Swanky.
Fern later takes a job as a camp host at the Cedar Pass Campground in Badlands National Park, where she runs into David, another nomad she met and danced with back in the desert community. David is working temporarily at Badlands National Park, but when he falls ill, Fern visits him in the hospital where he has had emergency surgery. The two of them later take restaurant jobs at Wall Drug in South Dakota. One night, David's adult son visits the restaurant looking for him, informing David that his wife is pregnant and asking him to meet his grandchild. David is hesitant, but Fern encourages him to go. David suggests she come with him, but she declines.
Is this when the plate breaking happens?
Yeah, this happens a little bit before then.
Okay.
The plate breaking happens a little before then because she meets him again for the second time.
Yeah.
And he's trying to, like, help her out, and she's, like, kind of annoyed by him trying, like, not leaving her alone, basically, because you can tell he has a crush on her, and they're actually maybe the same age, and she just looks really good for her age.
Yeah.
Because the amount of old people and old, like, folks that she becomes, like, incredibly good friends with and, like, hits on, and they hit on her.
Yeah, there's, like, a lot of sexual tension between her and everyone.
How old is she? To me, she looks like 40.
Yeah.
But my guess is maybe she's late 50s and these people are, like, early 60s.
Yeah.
And so it's not weird that they're like, let's have a relationship, young lady. Because to me, I'm like, if you're, like, 65 and you're hitting on this, like, 40-year-old woman, it's not going to happen, Grandpa. Move along.
Move along.
But also, I'm thinking maybe she's not. Maybe she's older.
Yeah, and she's definitely not over her husband, for sure.
Mm-mm.
At all. Like, they were in love.
Yeah, she's definitely not over her husband. but then he tries to help her.
And accidentally breaks these plates that were given to her by her father, which are actually Frances McDormand's plates that were given to her by her father.
Could they really break them?
I think so.
No.
Anyway, that happens and she gets kind of mad at him, but then they are still kind of friends, but also they flirt. It's very strange.
I don't think you can care that much about your possessions if you're gonna live in a van.
I think
honest.
So too.
To be honest, you kind of just have to be, like, prepared for things to break.
Yeah, for sure.
So
he goes to see his son and his new grandbaby.
Yes. So, but Fern doesn't go. So Fern takes a new job at a sugar beet processing plant, but her van breaks down and she cannot afford the repairs.
Yeah, they were like, you need to, like, just replace this van and get a new one. And she's like,
yeah, they said that the van, it will cost $2,300 to repair it
with
the labor and parts. But her van is only worth $5,000.
So it's almost not worth it.
They basically say, like, what you should do instead is just buy a new van. You should sell your van and use that money to purchase a new van. Mm-hmm. And she was like, basically, he's like, I can't.
I build this thing from the inside out.
And she's like, I live in it. Like, yeah. I can't. It would actually, in the end, cost her obviously a lot more than $2,300 to rebuild all of that year's worth of work.
For sure. Like, so, that's her house.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you'd have to completely rip it out. Start, mm-hmm. It would be hard, really hard. So unable to borrow the money, she visits her sister's family at their home in California. Her sister lends her the money. She questions why Fern was never around in their lives and why Fern stayed in Empire after her husband dies. But she tells Fern she's very brave to be so independent. Yeah, so this is, like, kind of, like, one of the only scenes we see with, like, I'll call them normies.
Normies, yeah, these are, like, the two actors mm-hmm. of the group.
And so, like, all the people that are, like, around, they're all kind of, like, I guess some of them must be real estate agents or something.
Yeah.
And they kind of get into a little tiff with her about, like, you know,
she's like you're selling people homes that they're going to be in debt for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and she's like, it's a scam, and they're like, that's a really simple way of putting it. And she's like, it's not. And they're like, well, not everyone wants to just pack up and move all the time. Not everyone wants to just take off and live in a van. Mm-hmm. And she gets really upset, and they're like, okay, our bad.
Yeah.
And then her sister kind of defends her and is like, she's like a pioneer, and
she's very brave for doing something so independent, yeah.
Yeah, and then I always got the feeling that, like, I really wish they kind of would have dived in this more. It kind of felt to me like she has some, like, weird trauma or something with her family.
With her family,
because
yeah.
Because there's a part where she's like, why don't you just stay here? Like, you can live here. We're not going to charge you rent or anything.
Like, you can just live with us. We want you to live with us.
And she was like, I can't stay here in this house. I can't sleep in this bed. And I'm like, I wonder what, why?
I wonder what happened, yeah.
Like, she won't even stay, like, the night there.
Yeah.
Like,
even though she's obviously very close to her nieces
and
her sister.
And she does stay there. She stays in David's house later.
Yeah.
So it's not like she just
doesn't want to stay in houses.
Yeah. It's that house.
It's that house. So it's something to do with her family.
But we don't know.
No.
It doesn't explain. Anyway, that's kind of the end of that little bit. Fern later visits David and his son's family. She learns that David has decided to stay with them long term.
Be a grandpappy.
He admits feelings for her and invites her to stay with him permanently in a guest house, but she decides to leave after only a few days and heads to the ocean.
Yeah, she, like, ghosts him.
Yeah, she just totally runs out. It's really sad. To be fair, I don't really ever think she had any feelings for David.
No.
And I think it's kind of weird that he was, like, So
adamant
that she, like, this woman he barely knows, like,
come live with them.
Yeah, but I also get that, like, maybe these kind, maybe, like, people that live on the road and meet each other three times, they're like, that's enough. You don't meet a lot of people.
It's true.
So Fern returns to her seasonal Amazon job and later revisits the Arizona rendezvous. There she learns that Swanky has died, and she and the other nomads pay tribute to her life.
They, like, throw these rocks into a fire, which is what Swanky said that she wanted
after
she died. And so they do it, and it's really sweet.
Yeah. Fern opens up with Bob about her loving her relationship with her late husband. It's interesting, though, because she says, like, she talks about how, like, he got really sick mm-hmm. and they knew he was going to die.
Yeah.
But she, like, she said something about morphine. Did she, like, kill him?
I don't know.
It kind of sounds like what happened is he was in a lot of pain and
she mercy killed him?
Mercy killed him or something because she didn't want to see him, like,
suffer more.
But I don't think her husband asked her to mercy kill him. It kind of sounds like she just
did it.
And I guess that might be one of the reasons she's having such a hard time, like, moving on.
Yeah.
At this point, it's been, like, a year. We basically follow her, like, through a year. Because mm-hmm. she sees Amazon job is, like, the bookend.
Yes. Yeah, she does it every year.
And then Bob shares the story of his adult son's recent suicide.
That's really sad.
It's a
really sad scene.
That's probably the saddest thing.
Whenever he's, like, he took his own life, I was like, oh.
And he, like, can't say it.
Oh.
Bob espouses the view that goodbyes are not final in the nomad community, as its members always promise to see each other again down the road. Sometime later, Fern returns to the nearby abandoned town of Empire to dispose of the belongings she has been keeping in a storage unit. She visits the factory and the home she shared with her husband before hitting the road again.
It's interesting. They totally cut out that young kid that she meets a couple times.
Yeah, she meets this, like, probably 18, 19-year-old kid. She basically gives him a smoke, and then later they meet.
Yeah, she gives him a cigarette, and then she's like, here, you just keep the lighter, you know? Yeah,
and then later on, they meet, and he gives her a lighter, and he offers her a drink, and she offers him food.
Yeah.
And they basically just...
They chat about, like, their loves and about how he is writing to this girl, but she, like, doesn't... Like, she wants to stay put.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be a nomad.
Yeah, and then she... And Fern talked about, like, a poem she read to her husband on their wedding day. Shakespeare. I was like, okay.
She said poem, and then she starts reading
Shakespeare. I was like, not really a poem, but whatever.
It's in verse. It's in verse.
It's in verse. It's in verse. Anyway, and that kind of, I think, just makes her, pushes her to accepting the death of her husband a little bit. That scene of her talking to the kid.
Yeah. It's interesting. She kind of is like, where's your family? Don't they, like, care? And he's just like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, there's a lot of, like, stuff in this movie that's just, like, not answered. Not like, answered. You don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really know what happened to her husband. You never really find out for sure.
You never really know what happened, like, with her family.
You never really know. You learn, like, some things about people. There's one lady... I don't think this is Swanky, but it's the very beginning, the first lady, she's like...
Is it Linda?
Yeah, it's Linda.
Yeah.
And she's talking to her, and you find out, like, the reason Linda does this is because when she... So she worked her whole life, and when she got her first Social Security check, it was only for $550 a month. And she was like, and I couldn't live on that at all. So rather than, like, go back to work and die and working...
Yeah, work myself to death.
She was like, I decided to just get an RV and use all my savings to buy that and then use my Social Security check just to live and I get to travel and, like, all this stuff. And I was like, that's so sad. That's so, like...
Like, yeah, it's so fucked up.
It's that's so fucked up. It's like, she works her entire life and now... And it's not like she doesn't like it, right? But it's like, obviously, this kind of
life... But you want a reward when it comes out.
And this kind of, like, life is obviously not for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, the one thing that this... The thing that I find very interesting about, like, the nomad lifestyle that they, like, document, everyone's very, like, giving. Everyone's very, very community-based, which is nice. But it's also a very, like, dirty, self-sufficient, hard lifestyle. Yeah. Like, you are not quite homeless, but you are essentially homeless. Like, you still...
She calls herself houseless.
Yes. It's like, you're not quite, like, on the street staying in shelter. Like, you have shelter.
Yeah.
But everything else is kind of difficult.
Yeah.
Like, your money is constantly having to be moving around for, like, repairs. You don't have, like, bathrooms. You don't have...
Showers.
You don't necessarily always have, like... warm places to stay. You don't always necessarily have legal places to park. And, like, there are multiple times in the movie where, like, she's sleeping and then in the middle of the night she has to get up and move her car because she's not parked legally and she can't find a legal place to park. And you'll see, like, she's tired in some scenes because probably because she had to move.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't get a full night's rest. And it's like, that's not... And also, another really interesting thing is everyone that does this is, like, so old.
So old.
You only see, like, a few young people.
The people that she meets and talks to love.
Yeah.
Yeah, talks about love with.
That's it. Everyone else is, like, 50s up.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's interesting to kind of think. And there's this part where they go and they look at all these, like, big-ass fancy RVs, you know, that cost, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever. And they're just, like, looking at it, and they're like, oh, my God.
This is like a disco.
And they're, like, a washer and dryer, and, like, you're like, oh.
I know.
It's really sad.
Just more about how America doesn't take care of its people.
No, yeah, I mean, they don't. And a lot of these people, like, multiple of them, pretty much all of them talk about how they were working, and then they either wanted to, they couldn't stand working anymore, or they... weren't getting any money off their retirement, or they got terminally ill, mm-hmm. or, like, that's, like, every single freaking person. It's, like, it's not just these, like, oh, I didn't want to do anything, and I wanted to just travel and see the world. And it's, like, that's some people. That's some of the, like, young people.
But a lot of the older people are doing this because they don't have options.
And it's, I mean, look, it's, to them, it's, like, this is preferable to working until I die.
Yeah. And, I mean, the book is called Nomadland: Surviving America in the 21st Century. I think that kind of says...
Well, this is something else, too. Like, Liam and I always talk about this because I love...
This is a Disney movie.
It is? Yeah, it is. Wow. Hmm. I always think about this because, like, I love watching those, like, tiny home van life people. I think it's so interesting. And, obviously, like, there are a lot of people, especially now... van life and tiny homes are becoming more of, like, people see them as, like, a viable living option.
Yes, yes.
And there's a lot of people, I think, that, like, because Liam and I always talk about that, like, if we ever wanted to, like, a lot of people, you can, like, build tiny homes, mm-hmm. and they're, like, semi-mobile.
Yeah.
Also semi-permanent. You can build them to where they are essentially houses, just with, like, the very bare necessities. You can mm-hmm. have kitchens, you can mm-hmm. have showers, you can mm-hmm. have toilets, you can have all of those things. But those are very expensive to build.
Yeah.
And they're cheaper than purchasing a house or even, like, renting or purchasing a mm-hmm. home. And so for a lot of people, it's like, well, I would rather go into a debt that I'm definitely going to pay off.
Yes.
And have a customized house that I can then move wherever. Mm-hmm. Versus, like they said, never being able to afford living in the house you're in. And if something does happen, you're just...
Out on the street.
Like, but... I think that people, like, I think that is something that really becomes, like, it really has become, like, a more, people really see it and consider it as real options.
Real options, yeah.
And it's, like, this is interesting because this is, like, the people who did have houses, who got fucked, who are now on the streets.
Yeah.
And this is, like, their alternative, and it's, like, it's so sad.
It's so sad.
It's like the non-glamorous side of tiny living. Not that any tiny living is glamorous, but the worst side of it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
It'd be hard.
Yeah, this movie, it's really pretty. It's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous movie. The sound mixing is awesome. Mm-hmm. The acting is really good. I mean, obviously, only one of them was really acting. But the acting is really good. Obviously, the direction is... really, really good.
I see why Chloe Zhao won Best Director for this.
Yeah.
A lot. Like, it is gorgeous. It just looks amazing.
It looks so pretty.
And it really has, like, such a nice cohesive feel, even in all the different places she's in. Frances McDormand is excellent. Everyone else in it is also very good, despite not being actors. That is, like, such a challenge mm-hmm. to direct.
Make them good.
50, 60 people who aren't actors.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I know. It's crazy. And also having, like, a production that's always moving all the time.
That's really difficult to keep that all organized and to produce such a good product. I'm sure that's so hard. And I get why she won Best Director.
Yeah. She had juggling a lot of stuff.
I don't understand why this movie won Best Drama.
No, don't really get it.
It's boring.
It's just so we... like, realism is fine, but, like...
it's good. You can have... it's not even just, like, it's, like, oh... I get the point of this is, like, nothing happens, and that's the point.
Yeah.
But it's so boring. Mm-hmm. It is so much, like, just nature shots, driving shots.
Yeah.
No talking. Just people driving. Just people doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Nothing being said. Nothing being done. So much of it is, like... silently moving the plot along. It's all just, like, day-to-day
stuff, yeah.
Stuff. And it is so boring.
And I get it. I get, like, why.
And this movie is 2 hours long.
2 hours!
And probably a solid 45 minutes of it is just silent day-to-day cinematography.
Of what
Fern is doing. And it is so incredibly boring.
Very boring.
And... there really isn't much of a plot, and everything that, like, intrigues me, nothing happens with, which I get. It's, like, here, but then also, like, in my opinion, think of, like, movies like Manchester by the Sea, where it's like a very realistic, very realistic movie about grief and like sadness. And that movie is still interesting because it's about an interesting thing.
It is.
And this is about an interesting like idea, an interesting
like the whole idea of the nomads is really interesting.
Yeah, very interesting like culture.
Yeah.
But just like on the screen, it doesn't really like pop off.
Yeah.
A lot. There's not a lot to a lot of it. I mean, I think the idea a little bit is like, you're probably like, what are these crazy hippies like? And what are they doing? And the idea is like, nothing. They're not like anything. They're just like old, nice people who
don't have any other options.
And they like have formed this community because they have to.
Yep.
And they all try their hardest to be like decent people because they're all in a really bad situation.
Yeah.
And like, that's the idea.
Like, it's showing the reality
of it. Reality of, like, what a lot of people who, like, live in their vans, like, what it is like. Yeah. And it's like, is it awful? No, it's not the worst way of living. And obviously several people have chosen to do this and even love it.
Yeah.
Even like it. But it's not glamorous and it's boring and it's dumb and it's costly and it's, like, all these things. And I think that that's, like, the idea.
Yeah.
But it is so boring.
It's so boring. I do have some trivia that might make it a little more interesting.
All right.
So we already know this, but almost the entire cast was comprised of real people, not professional actors, and they all play slightly fictionalized versions of themselves, and they are all credited as their real names in the credits. The woman who plays Fern's sister, Dolly, is actually one of McDormand's oldest friends in real life, Melissa Smith.
That's sweet.
When she was younger, McDormand said that her dream was to change her name to Fern and hit the road in an RV when she turned 65.
And then she was like, and then I became a famous actor.
And then I became a famous actor, so I made a movie about it. the production was filmed with a super minimal crew, just 25 people, and they all lived out of the vans that they used in the film.
That's insane.
Yeah. They traveled together for 5 months through more than 7 states during the filming. They were able to film inside an Amazon packaging facility simply by asking.
Wow.
They wrote a nice letter. Frances McDormand wrote a nice letter to Amazon and was like, can we film? And they were like, yeah.
Jeffy was like, as long as you say nice things and that we pay really good.
Which they did say.
no, we pay great.
McDormand's husband, writer-director Joel Cohen, actually visited the set one day. Cinematographer Joshua James Richards laughed. I look up and there's Joel Cohen watching me film. And Frances McDormand with an LED light on a C-stand. And I was like, we're really putting out the pulling out the stops here, Joel. I hope you appreciate this. It's my biggest setup. McDormand, who also produced the film, found director Chloe Zhao at the Toronto Film Festival after she watched her film, The Writer. Because the production was physically demanding, McDormand said she was actually assigned a babysitter to make sure she got to bed and got up on time so she wouldn't get exhausted.
I want to say that, like, how amazing would it be to be Chloe Zhao and you make a film and you put her on at the Toronto Film Festival.
And then
Frances McDormand is like, you're great. Would you like to direct this movie I'm producing? Or, like, would you be in, or, like, I think she wrote this. I think Chloe Zhao wrote this.
Yeah.
Like, she would be like...
But Frances McDormand got the rights to the book in... the film rights to the book in 2017.
So she found Chloe and was like, I want you to do this.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. She was looking for a director and she found Chloe and was like, wow. I want you to do this. The film is based on a nonfiction book, Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century, but the filmmakers really think of it as more of a companion piece. In fact, many of the real people in the movie were also in the book, like Bob Wells, for example. He really does have a YouTube channel called Cheap RV Living. Zhao and McDormand started filming scenes for Nomadland just 3 months after the actor's second Oscar win. Mm. And that evening, while they were in the van, McDormand got an upset stomach from dinner and really took a dump in a 5-gallon bucket.
Blech.
Blech. Wall Drug is a very real place. In fact, it's one of the most popular tourist attractions in South Dakota. And finally, the autumn leaves plates Fern said were given to her by her father in the movie were really gifted to McDormand by her own father when she graduated from college.
So sad.
So sad.
Aww.
Aww. Yeah, this movie definitely has some great merits, but I will also say that it's not exactly my type of film.
I'll never watch it again.
I'll never watch it again. Promising Young Woman. I will show so many people that film.
Yeah, I'll never watch this again. Or show it to anyone. Nope. Really pretty. A nice movie.
Nice movie.
Calming. Honestly.
Pretty calming. Very calming.
Very calming. It's like, I could put this on in the background.
Because it's so, it's like a nature doc.
And I would be like, yeah, this is good. Yeah. But that's not really what you want in a movie.
Not really. Not me.
Wikipedia has a whole thing called Reaction from China. Let's see. The film's success at the Golden Globe was initially praised by Chinese social media outlets, with the government and many citizens celebrating Zhao's victory as their own. However, after interviews re-emerged from 2013, in which Zhao criticized China as a place where there are lies everywhere, the government censored all mention of Nomadland online from March 5th, 2021. The film is scheduled for a limited release on April 25th, 2021, though it is not expected to draw a large box office.
Oh, shit. Ooh, yikes.
The critic response to this is amazing.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
The audience response is pretty good, too. Yeah. I gave it, it's like, I think its average on IMDb is an 8.
I mean, it's fine. What would you give it?
Maybe like a 6 or a 7. It's not bad.
It's not, by any means. By any means, it is not bad. I would probably say a 7. It is not bad. It's boring.
It's boring, yeah. And like, I just can't.
I'm not going to rewatch it.
I'm not going to rewatch it. I don't care about it. I don't feel like I really got anything out of watching it either, other than being like, well, that's pretty. Yeah. But, I mean, lots of movies are pretty, mm-hmm. and I don't think that makes them good movies. True. So, while I think this is a good movie, I don't think it is an interesting movie.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a beautiful piece of cinema.
Yes, that I never want to see ever again.
Ever. But, you know, it's exciting about Chloe Zhao being the second woman and the first woman, Asian woman.
I get why she won.
I mean, that sounds really hard, what she did.
It does. And it's a really interesting, like, look at this kind of lifestyle, which I think has become more and more, like, interesting to people in mm-hmm. the last, like, 10, 20 years. And it's an interesting, like, look into how close all of us are at any time
to this.
Yeah. Like, to being this. Yeah. To being homeless.
Yeah. I think it's a good reminder of that.
Yeah, it is. It's a really, I think the most, like, powerful parts of this movie are when you learn about why people are here.
Definitely.
Like, that's, without a doubt, the most powerful, like, parts of this movie are everybody's stories on why they're doing this.
And it's cool because, like, probably a lot of them are real.
Yeah. And I think that is, without a doubt, like, the most interesting part of this movie. Mm-hmm.
Just learning about all these displaced people.
Yeah, but that's only, like, half the movie. Yeah. Half of the movie is watching a fictional woman,
played by Frances McDormand,
do fictional things, which are ultimately not the most interesting part of this
movie. The more interesting part is all these normal people who are actually doing this.
To be honest, this is a documentary probably would have been wildly interesting.
Oh, I agree.
But as a movie, it's not that interesting.
I would agree.
As a documentary, I probably would have literally loved,
like,
this.
Them interviewing people?
Yeah, and talking to them and getting their stories. And even if it had been filmed in this, like, gorgeous way. Yeah. Like, people should start filming documentaries the way they film movies like this. Yes. Like, I understand the documentary style is not, like, movie style. Mm-hmm. But it's so much cooler.
It's so cool.
I would watch the shit out of this documentary.
Oh my god, me too.
And I bet the book is
really
good.
Book is awesome, because the book is written by just a journalist who studies subcultures.
And all of what it's about is why people do this. Yes. Which is what's interesting about it. Yeah. And I think like, the movie looks at, like, what it's like, but what it doesn't look at enough is, like, why people are in this situation, which is what I think is interesting about the movie.
Me too.
What's interesting about the movie is, like, all these people
got the government so fucked them over. Yeah.
And they're all old and stuff, mm-hmm. too. Like, it's so sad. There's this, when she's with Swanky and she's coughing and she's, like, looks so bad.
Oh, it's so sad.
I know. Reminds me of my grandma. I was like, no. It just makes me so sad to think about, like...
the reality.
Yeah, and that all these people work so hard.
Their entire lives.
And then here they are. Like, and some of them by choice, and, like, it's not, like, a that sad of a situation, but it's not good that, like, this is what people are having to do if they don't want to do it.
Exactly. Like, they are being forced into this situation.
Or that, like, this is the best alternative.
Yeah.
It's like... the alternative is being homeless.
Yeah.
Or going to live with your family and you know what I mean? And, like, being a burden on them. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad. We don't take care of our elders very well.
No. Nope.
And it's only getting worse for us. I am truly of the mind that Social Security will not exist when we are 65.
Oh, yeah.
It will not exist. It's not a sustainable system anyway. Like, I get why we did it the way we did it because, like... at the time, we needed the money and we needed it now.
Mm-hmm.
When Social Security was implemented, but the way Social Security should work, in my opinion, is you get what you put in. Mm-hmm. So, like, a certain amount is taken out of your paycheck for all the years that you work, and mm-hmm. that amount is only for you.
And so, whenever you reach a certain age, you get all of that money back.
You get all of that money back. Like, it's just like a forced retirement savings, basically. But instead, you get what right now we are paying for people's Social Security, and when we're 65, young people are going to be paying for our Social Security, mm-hmm. except they won't be because they keep cutting how much they take out of paychecks for it.
Yeah.
So that they can reallocate it, basically.
Wild. Do you have a review?
Yeah, I do.
Is it bad?
Yes.
Oh, is it that one?
Yes, it is. This is 1 out of 10. A lot of people just complained. They were like, this is boring, which I was like, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it is.
But this is 1 out of 10. The only reason this ain't a documentary is because they want this Oscar bait to be an inspiration to a suicidal, depressed generation of trapped rats by an intimidating system. By a intimidating system, I'm sorry. Young people are going completely crazy with the market that they're
obligated,
yep. to be in. The market of appearances to get a partner. The school market that sentences your future if you don't apply yourself, and also sentences your future if you don't indebt yourself or your parents to pursue higher education.
Indebit yourself.
Yeah, this person did not indebit themselves system for sure. The market of employment that is super competitive, which means lower wages and more pressure. The insurances market to be able to have health care. The mortgages market that traps you for most of your life to have a roof to compete with the neighbor. The rent market that leaves you without a cent and completely in fear of everything that can happen. This film romanticizes a way out of the game. But think why they're making this Oscar bait film. Don't be naive. So what I like about this one is they describe perfectly what this movie tells us why people have to do this. They're like, because people are screwed by all these different things, all these terrible systems. And that's why people have to do this. But then he says that they're romanticizing it, despite the fact that we actually watch her shit in a 5-gallon
bucket. Yeah, she did that.
Very early. This is not a romantic way. I mean, it isn't. I think it's very accurate. I think there is a level of this that is, like, very romantic. It is very in tune with nature. It's
you're beautiful. Traveling. But that is, like, that is what it's like, I would say.
But it also sucks.
It also sucks, and they show that.
And they show that, too. And that's why I think it's very realistic look at what this is probably like.
Yeah.
It can be very freeing. It can be very beautiful. And it also can suck ass.
And it can be disgusting.
And it can be expensive. And it can be gross. And it can be hard. And it can be lonely. And mm-hmm. it can be all those things.
Yeah.
And I think that this really does show that. And then I like when he says, but think why they're making this Oscar bait film. What is the reason?
What does
that mean?
Why do you think they're making this Oscar bait? I don't understand what you're saying. You're asking a rhetorical question,
But you didn't answer it in your thing. And it's like, think about what, because what you've said is that the system is bad mm-hmm. and that they made a movie that talks about how to get out of that system, or that, in your words, like, romanticizes a way out.
I don't really think it romanticizes a way out at all.
I think it is an option that people have that some people are forced to take.
Yeah, and it's not like a great option. For some people it is, but like for a lot of people it's not.
I think it's really interesting. I think what it seems to me like there is what they're mad about is that like this people could see this as like oh, I should get into van life or whatever, or nomad life to get out of this system.
But that's not really what it's about at all.
But it's like, I mean, you could, but you also, I think as many people as watch this and are like, oh my God, I want that to do that. Just as many will watch this and be like, oh my God, I hope I never have to do
that. Like those poor people being like forced into this basically.
Yeah, I hope I never have to do that.
Also, like, he never really answers the question, the only reason this ain't a documentary. Why isn't it a documentary? What does he make?
Because they want it to be Oscar bait?
Question mark? God, documentaries can win Oscars.
That's true. I just don't understand it at all. But I liked it. I think like, oh, that's a... Most of them are just like, oh.
Boring.
Boring, boring, boring. Pretentious, boring. This person says, I'm a real life nomad and this is dumb. Not very true to the real life of nomads. I don't know. It's based on a book.
It's based on a book.
About the real life of nomads.
And a lot of the people in the movie are real nomads, so.
A lot of people just being like, this movie sucks. I don't like it. It goes nowhere. Like, all those things. Normal, normal. But then that guy just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really. It's kind of...
It asks a lot of questions. I'm like, what is it?
But what is it, though? Like, you ask a lot of questions that you seem to know the answer to, but you're not implying...
But
you're not implying what the answer is.
I think they're just like, you should know the answer. And I'm like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know the answer. You know what they say. No, what do they say?
You know. Well, you know.
What they say.
But
I don't know. But you know.
But you know.
I don't. That's how I feel. Well, yeah.
So next week's a big week.
Yes. Well, yes. Yes.
So it's our 100th episode next week, guys.
It is. Oh my God.
So we're going to be doing one of the most successful films of all time.
Yep, it was.
It was up until Avatar.
Which makes no sense.
Which is hilarious because
Both James Cameron. It's Titanic.
Titanic.
4 fucking hours.
One of my sexual awakenings.
Oh my God.
The car scene. Man.
4 hours.
We can divide it up into two watchings. That's how the VHS companies originally planned it.
Ah! Why is it so long? 4 hours.
You gotta watch, you know, the first before they hit the iceberg. Mm-hmm. And then you watch the second half when they
hit the iceberg.
And it's interesting because I guess, like, the time of, like, how long it took for the ship to sink after they hit the iceberg is accurate in the film as to how long it actually took in real life.
That's so boring. What a boring fact. So we stretched it out as long as possible so we can have that fact. What?
Anyway, so we're doing Sound of Metal, the new also nominated film on Patreon. And you can watch that on Prime.
Yes.
So thank you guys for listening. All right, and guys, tune in next week for our 100th episode.
Yes.
Bye.